Welcome to this day's edition of the program. This is Radio Biafra Live Broadcast, and we are reaching from London. My name is Uchema 4. This morning's edition of the program is going to take a different shape. As always, this is your platform. This is Radio Biafra Live Broadcast. We are reaching from London. Wherever you are, this is your platform. Wherever you are, to you indigenous citizens of Biafra, this is your platform. To you men and women of goodwill, you are welcome, even the enemies of Biafra. And this is the platform upon which we continue to deliberate and to pay homage to the memories of our heroes and heroines who paid the ultimate price that we may even have the guts to be talking about Biafra. Yes, if you go to www.radiobiafra.co, you will be able to listen to this podcast. If you go to www.indigenouspeopleofbiafra, that is the same thing, or www.peopleofbiafra.org, www.biafrarestoration.com, www.biafravoice.com, www.ipob.org, www.biafratv.co. You will be able to get this program live, and this is another way of saying that we are on different platforms, we are everywhere, even on the satellite, even on Shoutcast. We are also on TuneIn. TuneIn remains the most reputable, the most responsible platform for the collection of all serious and efficient radio stations across the world. We are proud that we are on that platform. And of course, going by a few house rules, this program is not going to take calls from callers, because it is going to be kind of a documentary. We are going to take you down memory lane after reading the news headlines on certain important things that we need to be reflecting on. Of course, a reminder to all of us that we are in the second phase of this struggle, and the Biafra Defense Fund is still pivotal to the advancement and the completion of the Biafra Restoration Project. We need everything important. We need everything that we can muster. We need every kind of security that we can muster. We need every kind of arsenal at our disposal to defend ourselves. And on the news headlines, we are reporting that the Hausa Fulani Armed Herdsmen has laid siege to Enugu Nsukka Road. Biafran people are under siege from the enemies, and that is why we must do something very urgently. Also on the news, also in the news, the Nigerian government threatens South African firms over seized $5.7 million. And as one Nigerianese continue to wallow in confusion and desperation, we are reporting that the former governor of Anambra State, Mr. Peter Obi, has finally dumped APGA and defected to the PDP. And the federal government of the so-called Nigeria says that they will rescue the Nigerians in Boko Haram terrorist captivity. And these are all propaganda, as you can see. The Nigerian security cannot muster any courage against Boko Haram. Even if they do, Nigerian army is divided along ethnic lines, and a huge chunk of it, a huge chunk of the personnel and rank and file come from the northern part of Nigeria, and they pay direct allegiance to the Arewa Republic. And that is why you can do nothing. And that is why you must make haste. Every indigenous citizen of Biafra, everybody from the Biafra land living in northern part of Nigeria must know that his or her life is at risk. And the earlier you make plan to leave that particular place, the better for you. You must defend yourself. You must understand that the Nigerian government has no plan to protect you, because Nigeria is a corrupt edifice where dog eats dog. And following the collapse of building in the synagogue, Church of All Nations, belonging to TB Joshua, the South African government has criticized the state of Nigerian mortuary facilities. Details shortly. And that is going into the news in details. We are reporting that armed herdsmen have continued to launch attacks on motorists and passengers flying Enugu-Nsukka Road almost on daily basis, according to Vanguard newspaper investigation. This is not Radio Biafra's report, for those who will say that Radio Biafra has made it up. The bandits, suspected to be Fulani herdsmen, have left several passengers wounded, while others have lost cash and valuables. Narrating their ordeal to Vanguard, some of the victims called on the police to beef up security on dreaded portions of the road. In the latest attack, a victim who identified herself as Mrs. Salome Nadi, a teacher at Queen of the Rosary Secondary School in Nsukka, recounted how they were ambushed and robbed along Ugwogonike Opi Road, a few kilometers from Enugu. She said, "We were returning from Enugu on Thursday around 3 p.m. On reaching a sharp bend, four armed men dressed in Fulani regalia suddenly appeared from a nearby bush. They ransacked the commuter bus, cutting away mobile phones, jewelries, and cash from passengers." She added that the bandits also inflicted machete wounds on the driver before escaping into the bush. Another victim, Mr. Ogili Alphonsus, said on his way to Enugu 2 days ago, some Fulani herdsmen with their faces painted black ambushed the commuter bus in which they were traveling and robbing all the passengers of mobile phones, cash, and laptops. Onye na maro nenuwa, onye malama lobi kone, onye na roya, And the National Security Advisor, NSA Sambuda Suki, yesterday raised the alarm that South Africa was out to frustrate Nigeria's fight against terrorism by seizing funds meant for arms purchase and blocking moves to produce arms for the ongoing campaign against terrorism. The government said that the development might affect the fortunes of South African companies in the country currently enjoying favorable government policies in addition to Nigeria's commitment to South Africa's independence. Spokesman of the NSA, Karawu Adekunle, told a correspondent, that is Vanguard newspaper, that that government was worried over the development, which he said had become evident that South Africa was celebrating Nigeria's present terrorism travel. South Africa is believed to be a close rival on the African continent and was said to be interested in anything that could cause the fall of Nigeria. And of course, you can see the zoo is trying to blame the South African government for failing on their duty to protect their own people. Boko Haram is arguably the standing army of the northern part of Nigeria. There is nothing Nigeria can do about it. It has nothing to do with the arms. It has a lot to do with the structure of the zoo called Nigeria, and it has a lot to do with the souls of innocent Biafrans wasted and who are crying for vengeance. And Nigeria will never know peace. Nigeria and Nigerians will never know peace. They will continue to go from one calamity to the other until it collapses and dismembers. And we continue to report that Radio Biafra website is seriously under attack. For those who want to access the news, you must exercise patience. We are trying to know what the issue is. They are attacking Radio Biafra website every minute, every time for the past 2 days now. And there is nothing we can do. And that is why we have alternative websites through which you can listen to Radio Biafra. We have them and you know what they are. We have always advertised them. You can go to alternative websites. If the main website, www.radiobiafra.co, is not working, we continue with the news. And as Igbo Nigerians continue to jump from one ship to the other, from one bus to the other, from one car to the other, looking for crumbs from the table and looking for political favor, we are announcing in the news, of course, as reported by an independent news outfit, that the immediate past governor of Anambra State, Mr. Peter Obi, has defected to the ruling People's Democratic Party. He announced the switch from All Progressive Grand Alliance Abgawai receiving a visiting PDP delegation at his DRA on Ichahom. Led by Deputy Senate President Senator Ike Ekweremadu, the powerful delegation included Deputy Speaker Honorable Emeka Ihedioha, Secretary to the Federal Government Senator Pius Anyim Pius, and Chairman of the South South Government's Forum, Governor Teodoro Oji of Abia State. Others in the entourage included the Governor of Akwa Ibom State, Dr. Gosway Akpabio, Ebonyi State Governor Martin Elechi, former Governor Okwesile Ezenwodo, former Senate President Adolphus Wabala, Senator Uchechukwu Merije, Senator Emma Anosike, Senator Hope Uzodinma, Senator Ben Obi, Senator Igwe Paulinus, and Kema Chikwe. Equally in the delegation were Honorables Obuefi Ozombachi, Ofo Chukwuebo, Uche Ekunife, Chris Azubog, Fort Dike, Jerry Alaboso, and a host of others. Members of the Federal ESCO, Emeka Nwogu, Professor Chinedu Nebo, Osita Chidoka, Verily Onwalele, among others, were also on the delegation. On their mission, the national chairman of the PDP, Alhaji Adamu Muazu, represented by the National Publicity Secretary Olisameto, said the visit was as a result of the resolution by the entire Southeast to pay Obi a visit and persuade him to join the party for more meaningful contribution to national affairs. Meto, who said that PDP had never lost election in the East, but to Peter Obi as a person because of his integrity, forthrightness, hard work, honesty, which had made the people to love him and to be willing to follow him at all times, citing the recent joining of the PDP by Governor Mimiko. Mr. Metu said time was ripe for Obi to join. Of course, whatever Peter Obi is doing, there is this record that can never be obliterated. Whatever he has done in Anambra State, one thing is clear. Peter Obi masterminded the killing of MASOB members. That is what I have against him. And they dumped them in a Zoo River. Most of them were killed and dumped somewhere else and buried in mass graves. That was in 2006 and subsequently the following years. And Obasanjo was also in connivance with all this. I cannot understand why a governor who loves his people, if actually he does, will, after all the developments in different parts of the zoo called Nigeria, will encourage SARS, Special Anti-Robbery Squad, made up of mostly headsmen from the Northern Hausa Fulani extraction, to come to Biafra land and Igbo land precisely to murder our people and to continue to unleash mayhem and to engage themselves in all sorts of heinous crimes. And the so-called governor of Anambra State, who is, of course, reputed for being very efficient in his governance, has allowed this to happen. And today, the autopsy report of another batch of MASOB members killed and dumped in the Zoo River has never come out. They have tried to cover it up, but they will not. We are holding Peter Obi to account. All those who worked with him must be held to account. The autopsy report, as we have always reported, must be presented to the people of Anambra State, to the people of Igbo extraction, to the family members of MASOB members who were killed and dumped in that same Izu River. The world must know the atrocity that was committed against the people who are not just committed, but are convinced in the quest for the restoration of Biafra, and that is why they involve themselves. Peter Obi has blood on his hands, and he must render account, no matter how long, no matter how he tries to hide away from it. And 3 weeks after, 116 people, of whom 84 South Africans, lost their lives when a six-story guest house attached to the synagogue building of All Nations collapsed. Fresh indications have emerged that the South African government and the Nigerian authorities in Lagos are bickering over alleged inadequate mortuary and facilities, which may have led to the decomposition of the victims' corpses beyond recognition. And at this juncture, we will leave you with some interviews and documentaries. You may have heard it before, but it remains, or they remain, significant, and it is going to take us down memory lane on what and what we need to do with respect to the Biafra Restoration Project. We urge you all to keep focus. We must not be distracted by any machinations of the enemy. We must do what we are supposed to do, which is to commit totally and in all its ramifications, everything that we have, everything that we can muster, to the Biafra Restoration Project. Because if we cannot do anything at this time and defend our land and defend our people, we will bequeath nothing to posterity.
One thing I've noticed, Premier, while I've been here, is that Northerners seem to have, I might almost call it, obsession about the Igbos. Could you perhaps explain that to me?
Well, the Igbos are more or less the type of people whose desire is mainly to dominate everybody. If they go to a village, to a town, they want to monopolize everything in that area. If you put them in a labor camp as a laborer, within a year they will try to emerge as headman of that camp, and so on. Well, in the past, our people were not alive to their responsibilities, because you can see from our northernization policy that in 1952, when I came here, there weren't 10 northerners in our civil service here. Then I tried to have it northernized, and now all important posts are being held by northerners.
Is this policy of filling all key posts in the north solely with northerners and not with other Nigerians a temporary or a permanent one?
In actual fact, what it is a northerner first. If you can't get a northerner, then we take an expatriate like yourself on contract. If we can't, then we can employ another Nigerian, but on contract too. This is going to be permanent, I should say, as far as I can foresee, because it will be rather dangerous to see the number of boys who are now turning from all our learning institutions coming out with having no work to do. I'm sure whichever government of the day might be, it will feel rather embarrassed, and it might even lead to bloodshed.
Doesn't this damage the idea, sir, of all people in all regions in Nigeria being fellow citizens of one country?
Well, it might, but new to our region, but how many northerners are employed in the east or in the west? The answer is no. And if there are, there may be 10 laborers employed only in the two regions.
Fellow Biafrans, on the occasion of your rally to demonstrate your solidarity with the struggles of your kith and kin back home, I send to you all fraternal greetings. As one who has been entrusted with the onerous responsibilities of guiding our young republic through these difficult times, I must confess that it is always a source of deep pleasure and encouragement to me to receive assurances of the support of the people and their continuing determination to persevere until complete victory is achieved. It is, therefore, with feelings of unbounded pleasure and deep appreciation that I salute this august gathering. You are all aware that for over 4 months now, Nigeria has been waging a war of aggression to destroy Biafra and her people. This invasion by Nigerian hordes was mounted because the people of the former eastern region of Nigeria were forced on May the 30th, 1967, to declare themselves the independent state of Biafra in order to assure the security of their lives and property. As you are aware, the people of the former eastern region of Nigeria had believed, as if it were an article of faith, in the concept of a united Nigeria. No section of the then Federation of Nigeria had worked as assiduously for the attainment of this ideal as did eastern Nigeria and her people. No section had made as many and varied positive contributions towards the realization of true unity. Having over the years spearheaded the movement for closer union, having demonstrated our faith in Nigeria in concrete terms by allowing our sons and daughters to sojourn in other parts of the country, thereby contributing tremendously to the development of such areas to the neglect of our own, it was a hard decision for us to take to opt out of a federation in which we had invested so much. But we had no real choice. Over the years, our erstwhile compatriots had made it clear in unmistakable terms that they did not want us in the Federation. Since the 1950s, our people were expropriated and discriminated against in parts of Nigeria other than their own. Furthermore, the experience of the three harrowing waves of remorseless genocide in 1945, 1953, and especially in 1966, involving a total of nearly 40,000 dead and countless others maimed or destitute, provided an object lesson which could not but be taken seriously. Self-preservation is probably the strongest human instinct. And it is this that has compelled the harassed and persecuted people of eastern Nigeria to seek refuge in their own home and amongst their kindred. As a proverb of one of our Biafran languages has it, a man who is rejected by others cannot reject himself. The inordinate ambition of the House of Fulani oligarchy to continue to dominate the whole of what was formerly the Federation of Nigeria, the unrealistic desire to acquire the wealth and resources of Biafra while rejecting their people, the mad and homicidal desire to exterminate from the face of the earth 14 million Biafrans, drove Gawan and his clique towards unleashing a costly war to attain the untainable, the subjugation of this young but promising republic. Even with the vast resources of the former Federation of Nigeria with which to prosecute the war, even with the active collaboration of those international opportunists, Britain and the Soviet Union, an unholy alliance of vested interests, even with the attempt to subvert our government by suborning some of our highly placed military and civilian personnel, an attempt which was foiled at the nick of time, Gawan has failed to make good his boast to crush Biafra, a campaign which he bragged would only take 48 hours to accomplish has now dragged on for almost 5 months and will drag on for as long as it takes Gawan and his clique, both Nigerian and others, to realize that nothing can shake the will or crush the spirit of a determined people. If Gawan's military campaign has achieved anything, it is only a confirmation of the fact that Biafrans have nothing to expect but destruction from the hands of their erstwhile Nigerian compatriots. In the few border towns which fell into the hands of the Nigerian forces, Biafrans were pillaged and what could not be stolen was destroyed, while the men were shot and tortured and the women defiled. Even foreign correspondents have testified to the massive killings of people of Biafran origin and a particular ethnic grouping in the Republic of Benin when that young republic fell into the hands of the Nigerians as a result of treachery. Instead of accepting the fact and the truth which they know, that they forced the people of the former eastern region out of the Federation, the Nigerian aggressors have been attempting to dupe the world by claiming that we seceded in order to keep our oil wealth to ourselves. You all know that in spite of our oil and other resources, the former eastern Nigerians were always the greatest advocates of unity. General Irunsi, himself an easterner, was murdered by the northern Nigerians because of his determination to unify the country. For a people who have made such great sacrifices and abandoned their most valuable investments in Nigeria in quest for safety, this is the unkindest thing to say. No, it is the Nigerian leaders themselves who are in fact guilty of what they accuse us of, and have shown beyond doubt that they are only interested in having our resources and not our people. Our detractors have also attempted to confuse African and indeed world opinion by propagating the despicable falsehood that our independence will be a precedent for separation in other African states. They have not bothered to ask themselves, for instance, what was the precedent for the alleged Biafran secession? The truth is that one secession does not necessarily lead to another. Throughout history, there has been a long list of empires that broke up into nations and federations which split into sovereign states. the Union of Great Britain and Ireland, the federations of Mali, Malaysia, West Indies, and Central Africa are recent examples of this. The disintegration occurred on account of unique local factors or to grave linguistic and religious differences. Biafra, however, remains a lesson to all countries of what could happen if they were to unleash a pogrom against a section of their own community. Amongst other spurious arguments trumped up by the Lagos clique is another that Nigeria is a single interdependent economic unit and that its disintegration would disrupt established market trends and leave the separate economies so much poorer. It is true that as between the regions of the former Nigerian Federation, the economic pattern was one of interdependence, but this is equally true of all world economies which are complementary. But this should not make us to try and force unworkable political units on an unwilling people merely to create a large market. It is enough for both states to enter into trade and technical agreements. With more efficient planning, these separate units could even be made economically more prosperous. This also disproves the argument that Nigeria would not be viable without Biafra. Perhaps Nigeria may be poorer for it, and it should have occurred to its leaders to be more tolerant of people who they now admit constituted their wealth. But the rest of Nigeria has enough potentiality to remain a great and united African state, if only its leaders would show realism and imagination in harnessing their vast potential resources. The Nigerian leaders demonstrated their scorn for African opinion, which they are now trying desperately to cultivate by refusing to accept our calls for a peaceful resolution of our conflict through the good offices of many African states. Even when they had reluctantly agreed to the Organization for African Unity's desire to mediate, they are taking steps to frustrate their efforts. Biafra is no longer asking for anyone's mediation, but is willing, at all times, as in the past, to resolve its conflict with Lagos at the conference table. The Organization of African Unity has shown itself insensitive to our suffering and incapable of resolving the crisis. Its so-called mediation, which presumes that there is only one side to a dispute and can go to every length to appease that side, cannot be expected to be fair, objective, and just. The present conflict can now be resolved by individual states taking initiative by recognizing our right to existence and urging on Nigeria to abandon her war of aggression against an injured people. Having failed on all scores, the Nigerians have raised the bogey of a minority in Biafra being forced into independence against their wish. This again is far from the truth. Our people, irrespective of their ethnic grouping, have shown conclusively their commitment to and support of the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Biafra by their sacrifice in blood and contribution to the war effort. The decision to declare the sovereign and independent state of Biafra was a unanimous one made by the chiefs, leaders, and representatives of all communities in Biafra at the Consultative Assembly and Council of Chiefs and Elders. The so-called representatives of the minorities in Lagos have never had any popular backing, were defeated in elections in their own homes during the civilian era, and have since been denounced by their own people. Some of them, like Okoy Arikpo, are themselves guilty of intellectual dishonesty, since they were party or sponsors of the constitutional proposals creating the present provinces of the Republic of Biafra in order to allay minority fears. Our people know enough of Lagos and can testify that the massacre of thousands of then Eastern Nigerians was irrespective of tribal affiliation. The bombing and other military brutalities since Biafran independence have followed the same pattern. Having suffered together, they are now united together in solidarity to fight on to victory, to assure a place of honor and respect for themselves and their children. When the Lagos vandals realized that they were doomed to failure, they, along with their foreign megaphones like the BBC, thought that they could win by pretending to be doing so. They are trying to make the world believe that they have taken Enugu, that the war is virtually ended, and that they are now engaged in the task of reconstruction. Nothing is further from the truth. Our valiant forces have continued to keep the enemy at the few border towns and zones they have captured by treachery. The gallant Biafran forces are now in control of most of Enugu and Bonny and are gradually wiping out the enemy invaders at Calabar. They have also re-entered Ugoja. The Nigerian troops will never forget the lesson of their Onitsha invasion, where thousands of their men were decimated. Our troops are fighting bravely and will continue to do so until victory is won. The Nigerians appear not to know that by unleashing a war of aggression, in addition to several past injuries, they have aroused a whole people against them. This is a people's war for freedom. Biafra has come to stay, and the fact of our independence is irreversible. Ours is a nation of 14 million people with various ethnic groupings united together by past sufferings and present freedom, and nothing can shake our determination. Conscious of the justness of their cause, and with God on our side, our people are determined to fight to the last man, confident of eventual success. May God bless you all, fellow Biafrans, and keep and protect Biafra.
Right now, I feel it is important to draw the attention of all Biafrans, and in fact, the international community as well, to what the Biafrans are fighting for. That is the restoration of the Republic of Biafra. The series of injustice perpetrated against the people of Biafra was initiated by a mercenary soldier working on behalf of the British government. His name was Frederick Lugard. In the year 1914, Lugard, as colonial administrator and friend of the House of Fulani, using his connections with the British Colonial Office, committed the most outrageous fraud in human history by unilaterally declaring the amalgamation of Northern and Southern Protectorates in our part of Africa and naming these territories Nigeria. This British mercenary did not consult the people before forcing them into an unholy union of his dreams. The name Nigeria was really a coinage from two words, Niger, that is the river Niger, and area, meaning the area of land around the river Niger. It does not require a rocket scientist or a wordsmith to forge this name. I understand that the name was in fact suggested by Lugard's wife. For Lugard to choose the name Nigeria for his contraption
is clear evidence. He was only interested in the land and its resources, not in the well-being of people of diverse cultures inhabiting the land. So, ab initio, the name Nigeria was only a geographical description without any cultural or historical content, and has remained so up till today. For even Lugard himself described the North and the South as oil and water that can never mix. About 30 years into Lugard's experiment, in 1945 to be exact, the first catastrophe struck. Biafrans were slaughtered in northern Nigeria by the Hausa Fulani as a clear expression of their resentment of the amalgamation. In 1953, the Northerners struck again. Once more, Biafrans were the victims. The Nigerian census of 1956 was rigged in favor of the Northerners by their British friends, who inflated the population figures for the North to the detriment of the South. The pre-independence federal elections were similarly rigged by the departing British colonial administrators to benefit the North against the South. It was not therefore surprising that a few years after independence, Nigeria descended into anarchy and chaos. This time again, Biafrans were the target, chased away from all over Nigeria as hundreds of thousands of them were murdered in northern Nigeria. In May, July, August, September, and October 1966, Biafrans were hounded and massacred all over northern Nigeria by the Hausa Fulani shouting, "Araba, Araba," meaning secession. The bruised and battered Biafrans returned to the safety of their homeland to nurse their wounds, abandoned by the federal government of the country to which they were supposed to belong. A national conference was held in Aburi, Ghana, under the chairmanship of General Ankrah, the Ghanaian head of state. Far-reaching agreements aimed at keeping Nigeria together were concluded between General Yakubu Gowon, representing Nigeria, and General Chukwu Emeka Odunegwu-Ejukwu, representing the people of Biafra. But in a most arrogant display of power, Nigeria unilaterally annulled those agreements. The Biafrans had no other choice but to declare their independence on May 30, 1967. Instead of allowing Biafrans to nurse their wounds in the peace of their homeland, Nigeria, propelled by sheer hatred and arrogance of power, declared a war of aggression against the beleaguered Biafrans. Nigeria wanted the land of Biafra without the people of Biafra, and conducted a three-year genocidal war to achieve that purpose. At the end of it all, about 3.5 million Biafran men, women, and children were killed in their homeland. I have never read anywhere that people of different cultures and religions had been forced to unite by sheer military means. The American Civil War was a unique case. Prior to that war, all the states had voluntarily consented to join the Union after a gruesome war of independence against the British. But when the southern states refused to give up slavery and decided instead to secede from the Union, the northern states, led by Abraham Lincoln, took up arms against the South as a matter of principle. The North believed that since all men were created equal, it was unjust for people to own slaves as private property. The American Civil War was not in reality to unite the country, but a war in defense of human rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. In each genocidal enterprise, Nigeria obtained the ready military and diplomatic assistance of Britain, the former Soviet Union, Spain, the then Organization of African Unity led by the former Ethiopian head of state, Emperor Haile Selassie, the non-aligned nations led by President Tito of former Yugoslavia, and the United Nations Organization led by U Thant. The lie being bandied about by Britain and Nigeria was that if Biafra was allowed to secede from Nigeria, the whole of Africa would be afflicted by the disease of secession. Shamelessly, the so-called civilized world colluded with Nigeria in the massacre of millions of Biafran men, women, and children. The principle of human rights was thrown to the winds. Biafra was strangled by overwhelming military force, diplomatic fraud, and starvation. Even Christian charity organizations and the International Red Cross were dissuaded and frustrated by Britain and Nigeria from delivering urgently needed food materials and medicine, which would have saved lives. Whether we believe it or not, there is a great being who is in control of events on earth. Some refer to him as Karma. We call him God. Nigeria thought that once Biafra was defeated in battle, everything would be all right, and she would live happily ever after. There is no way you can spill the blood of 3.5 million people and expect that there would not be some retribution. We all know what is happening to Nigeria today. What of the greatest ally of Nigeria? War against Biafrans, Britain. One quiet afternoon early this year, two machete-wielding Nigerian extremists attacked a British soldier and killed him in broad daylight and bragged about it. That event was one of the greatest insults inflicted on a world power such as Britain. Right now, Scotland is in the process of seceding from Britain after about 400 years of marriage voluntarily entered into by England and Scotland. Yet, it was the same Britain that scared the world stiff about the impending balkanization of Africa, should Biafra go its way, and led the chorus of the sanctity of the territorial integrity of Nigeria as the Biafran War of Independence raged on. I do not know what will happen to the territorial integrity of Britain when Scotland eventually secedes. The truth is that a territory can never be more important than the people who live in it. That is a basic principle of human rights. But the British government, under the leadership of Harold Wilson, did not believe that the Biafran people were entitled to the same human rights which British people enjoyed. That is why Harold Wilson is one of the least respected world leaders today. As leader of the Organization for African Unity, Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia campaigned against the existence of Biafra because he believed that it was allowed to exist, the province of Eritrea, which was then part of Ethiopia, would secede. But in spite of Haile Selassie, Eritrea is now an independent nation. What about President Tito of Yugoslavia? As leader of the non-aligned nations, President Tito campaigned against Biafra because he feared that his country would break if Biafra were allowed to exist. Where is Yugoslavia today? In the dustbin of history. Out of the ashes of Yugoslavia emerged four or five countries in spite of President Tito. Now, the former Soviet Union supplied Nigeria with all the MiG fighter planes with which it terrorized, killed, and maimed Biafra men, women, and children in their homes, in marketplaces, in schools, in churches, in hospitals, and in refugee camps. Where is the great Soviet Union today? In the dustbin of history. From the ashes of the former Soviet Union emerged 15 independent countries, including Russia. What of Egypt? While it was not clear whether the Egyptian government cooperated with Nigeria during its war against Biafra, it was common knowledge that Egyptian pilots were responsible for the indiscriminate bombing and strafing of civilian targets that accounted for the loss of thousands of lives. They were probably mercenaries who did not want to risk their lives and therefore avoided raiding the war fronts, since they must discharge their bombs and kill some people. They frequently went for soft targets, such as markets, schools, and hospitals. After all, they knew they were engaged in a war of extermination anywhere, and the civilized world was behind it. See what is happening in Egypt today. Not so good. By contrast, the five countries that recognized Biafra, namely Tanzania, Zambia, Gabon, Ivory Coast, and Haiti, have enjoyed peace and stability till today. Their heads of state at the time of the Biafran saga, namely Dr. Mwalimu Julius Nyerere, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, Mr. Omar Bongo, Mr. Ufe Boigny, and Papa Doc, François Duvalier, were some of the most respected statesmen in the world. Tanzania has not disintegrated, even though it is a union between mainland Tanganyika and the island of Zanzibar off the coast of East Africa, a union voluntarily agreed by the two entities without a land border, but with strong cultural and historical ties. Where was the United Nations organization on the blight that was Biafra? Missing in action. The world body never for once had testimony from the Biafran people. It listened only to Nigeria because Britain, as a permanent member of the Security Council, thwarted all effort by Biafra to present her case to the world, and by implication deceived the United States on the issue of Biafra. It is now time for Nigeria to pay its debt to history. It is the wish of everybody concerned that Nigeria should disappear peacefully, letting the component parts go their way after 100 years of an unholy marriage that has refused to work. Or Nigeria may choose to die a violent death. This would make no sense, since too many lives have already been lost, and the land is soaked in blood. Since all things made by mortal man must perish, so shall Nigeria, made by Frederick Lugard and his wife, cease to exist. And from its ashes, the Republic rebels. The case of India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh is one worthy of emulation. So also are the cases of former Czechoslovakia, former Yugoslavia, Ethiopia and Eritrea, as well as Sudan and Southern Sudan. Thomas Jefferson, writing the American Declaration of Independence, said, and I quote, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This idea goes back to Athens of the 5th century BC, when Socrates spoke of a law of God respected by all, barbarian and Greek alike, or in the Antigone of Sophocles from the 5th century BC, when Antigone appealed to the law of God that is the same for all over the world, and justifies any action that might break the laws of men. Cicero defined natural law in his works on moral values as the law of God revealed in the reason of his universe. It is one law, valid in all places and in all times. It will be the same in Athens and in Rome and in every future nation to come, for that law rests with God, and there are consequences for breaking the law of God. I hope the United Nations will be alive to its responsibility this time around, and that the international community will stop playing games with African lives. The loss of 3.5 million Biafran lives can never be in vain. That would run counter to the principles of natural justice, laws of nature and of nature's God. The people of Biafra have waited all these years for reason and common sense to prevail, for justice to be done, so that old and current wounds can start to heal, and the spirits of 3.5 million Biafran men, women, and children can start to rest in peace. It is time for the restoration of the Republic of Biafra. God bless people of goodwill around the world, and God bless Biafra. Thank you.
One of the things you've talked about is it's not so much that Biafra has to be an independent state, but that it has to be economically viable, and you can't really have that with Nigeria as it is. How do we get there?
We cannot be economically viable if we are not politically viable.
Right.
And political viability means complete and absolute independence.
It has to have been.
We must be independent. Yeah. And again, God creates countries and nations, and not man. There are many ways that nations can emerge. It is always an organic process. We understand that. We respect that. What people, most commentators, don't appreciate about Africa, and which most Africans are a bit slightly uncomfortable with, is that somebody coming from Europe and without regard for your culture, your traditions, your way of life, saying, you are now in one country and your name is Nigeria.
Right.
There is something unnatural about it.
Yes.
I said to the British government, if you had come, conquered my people, which is a natural human process.
Yeah.
That is entirely natural.
Right.
If you had come, conquered our people, made us English, I can live with that.
Yeah.
But to come and hand over a children of God over to something completely alien, this same culture that we have in the north, which is an Islamic culture, tried to take us over many years ago and they failed.
Mm.
You now came and completed the cycle for them.
Mm.
There is something evil about it.
Yeah, something inorganic about it.
Inorganic.
Yeah.
Very, very inorganic. And you cannot... We don't talk about economic development, because before you talk about economy, you talk about things like policies, both macro and micro, all the rest
right.
of it. you are dealing with people who don't, who cannot differentiate between macro and micro.
No, absolutely. That's right. That's a problem. Yeah. Education is key for the world outside Biafra, and that's where this starts. The political has to start in the education.
That's correct.
When you speak to people in the UK, people in the US, is there an openness to independence for Biafra?
No, there isn't. It's what you get is very condescending, wishy-washy. These are black Africans, really. What do they know? Sort of attitude. We know best than they do. And we try as much as possible to enlighten and educate the American and, by extension, the European audience to the fact that before you had freedom and liberty in any part of the world, in Biafra land, we had freedom and liberty.
Mm.
Before you had political asylum in any other part of the world, where I come from, there was political asylum being granted to people. That is the meaning of Biafra anyway. Come and join if you believe in our value system. We had a series of both political, legal, and legislative structures that endured for thousands of years.
Mm.
These were unceremoniously swept away in the name of, I don't know, civilization or advancement.
Right.
Therefore, the British must be questioned, or the mentality or the psyche of Europeans and, by extension, Americans must be put to the test to explain, to rationalize why the emergence of states in Africa cannot be allowed to adopt the same organic route by which every other civilized nation emerged.
Mm.
Why is that impossible? That's what I ask Americans and Europeans.
And their answers are not good. There are no answers.
Never be. Yeah. They don't have any answers to it. All they say is that, why didn't you just get on with it? I want the same things that you have in America. I want liberty. I want freedom. I want all the rest of it. That is what makes you a human being, or as an animal. And being forced to live in cages in Africa, or being forced to live more or less like animals, is not a situation we are prepared to tolerate for very long.
No.
Yeah. Death is better.
Have there been armed clashes between Biafrans and Boko Haram? Has there been a defense of Biafrans?
No, not at all. Because we are not allowed to defend ourselves. They can kill us. They can get arms flowing in from Lebanon, from Iran, from Saudi Arabia. There are jihadists coming from all over the place, coming in there. There was a plane load of arms that came in, was detained at the airport from Egypt. The Arab world, that is what drives me insane. The Arab world and the Islamic world are busy supporting Boko Haram in their stated aim of spreading Islam to Christians in Nigeria. The Christian world are not reciprocating. They're not coming to our rescue. I don't know how you can defend yourself against somebody who is armed with RPGs, armed with AK-47s. I don't know if you do that through prayer and fasting. I do not know.
Right.
But that is the sort of condition we are faced with. In other words, as we speak right now, the process of Islamization is gathering momentum, and no one is doing anything.
Right. It's medieval. It's you will convert or you will die.
They crucified some people. Was it 2 days ago? I think we've got the pictures on Facebook.
They actually crucified some people.
Yeah. The same thing ISIS is doing, that they're doing, that program. You either convert or we kill you. And I don't know why the world expects us to deal with that. It's either there is something going on. It's either everyone else is a Muslim. That's how I say sometimes. Like, everyone in the West is a Muslim. That's what I say. Because you couldn't possibly keep quiet when such a thing is going on.
No.
It's terrible.
No.
Terrible.
You're opening my eyes in ways I knew this was going to be eye-opening. I did not realize what is happening. Who is Boko Haram organically? Are they a government creation? Are they...
Boko Haram is, you need to understand the geopolitics of Nigeria to then start comprehending the concept or the ideology that drives the insanity that is Boko Haram. In the north, You have the areas you call the Mohammedan Emirates of the North. Mm-hmm. These are people who are predominantly, by ancient culture and tradition, Islamic. They are Hausa, Fulani people. In the west, coming down near Lagos, you have the Yoruba people, and in the east, you have the Biafran people. Now, the Hausa Fulani people, we are told by the British that they have the right to rule in perpetuity Nigeria. The British in 1953 and 57 were involved in a massive fraud to rig the census results. In other words, they skewed the numbers to always favor the Hausa Fulani people, that they may remain in power. And the reason for that is that the British is scared that Biafran people, especially the Igbos, are somehow human, that we can think properly.
Yeah.
And we have the oil. The oil wells is in the oil wells, the reserves, everything is where we come from.
In Biafra.
And the British couldn't retain or sustain their colonial presence in Africa because the USA asked them to leave. So what they now did is to take the control of the oil, hand it over to a group of people they think they can manipulate very easily. That's all. That's what has happened. And now they now believe that they have the right to rule. Unfortunately for them, President Goodluck Jonathan, the incumbent, emerged out of circumstances that could be described as somehow mysterious. He came up as the president, and now they don't like it. Three people funded Boko Haram. The ex-president, head of state Buhari, another ex-head of state, Hausa Fulani Islamic person called Babangida, another vice president, Atiku Abubakar. They consciously went out to fund Boko Haram. Because Buhari said, after Jonathan won the 2011 elections, that I will make the country ungovernable. He said it openly. And they went ahead to do it by killing poor, defenseless Biafran Christians. Because they know that Christians around the world will not come to our rescue.
Yeah.
They also know that no other people will come to our rescue because they don't want us to emerge as a people. That's a problem.
Yeah. So the British don't want you to emerge as a people.
No.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's a problem.
It's a huge problem.
Massive. But this time around, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
I'm sure the British didn't want the USA to emerge either.
No.
Whether they like it or not, we shall emerge.
Yeah.
Or everything else there will die.
It'll have to. I mean, yes. It's one or the other at this point.
One thing has to happen. Either we have Biafra or we all die. There's no going back this time around. There'll be no exile, no running away. That is our land. We've lived there for thousands of years. That's where we were born. That's where we'll die.
Yeah. Are you all willing to go back and be there?
At the drop of a heart, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And a heartbeat.
Yeah.
We'll go there.
And obviously loved ones are there.
They're there. My parents are there. Yeah. My loved ones are there.
Yeah.
And it's a land we've been in for, as I said,
thousands of years. And a history and a rich culture and a vibrant way of life that has literally been
obliterated.
Yeah.
You go to the book of Leviticus. 80% of what you have in the book of Leviticus occurs where I come from. 80%. 80%.
The Levitical law.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. It wasn't us. I strongly believe, this is my hypothesis, of course I hold on to it very strongly. As soon as the British discovered in the late 18th century, because the same Hausa Fulani people in Zamfara told them, I think I have the map somewhere in London, that across that river lies what they believe to be part of the lost tribe of Israel,
all
hell broke loose.
Yeah.
There was then a very systematic and deliberate policy to obliterate our history. The British first said that the Igbos don't have any history. First of all, they removed the name Biafra, which was exactly the name they used to go into treaties with us. You see there clearly written, the chiefs of Ishekiri and Biafra. They then quietly took that away to now only take a component of that, one clan alone, which is Igbo. Because in Biafra, you have the Idoma, you have the Igbo, you have the Bibio, you have the Efik, you have the Izon people, which they call Ijo, you have the Shekiri, you have the Robo, and some parts of Igala.
Wow.
These are the seven people that make up, these are the seven tribes that make up Biafra land. The British came, then isolated all the rest, those of our cousins around us, and focused the attention on us. But there's one good thing about it is that in their amalgamation document that they produced in 1904 or thereabout, which I still have, they made reference, the very first time a European is referring to an African race as great. Yes, the man said the great Igbo race across the Niger.
Mm.
And that speaks volumes.
And the Niger is the river.
The river, yes.
And they, so Nigeria is taken from just drawing lines on the map from the river.
Of course, yeah. That's the name. I mean, the name is Nigeria, named after a river. Before that was the Royal Niger Company, which is a British company.
Right.
Which by royal charter was running the whole place. And then from that, incrementally, I have all the paperwork.
Yeah.
And they signed. At no time did we give the British the consent to form a country called Nigeria. At no time in our history. I have all the paperwork. We gave them our land to trade.
Right.
That's all. But they went ahead and gradually decided to form a country. Despised us so much that they handed us over to Hausa Fulani Islamic Caliphate. And now they're killing us and nobody's coming to our rescue, which I think is very sad.
If we come to the rescue, how are we coming?
We need support from USA, from United States government, from the Christian community in the USA, and more importantly also from the Jewish community in the USA. They did something, in fairness to them, in 1968, 69, 70, the Jewish Congress in the USA did something. They tried to lobby the US government and Congress to do something about Biafra. From these three groups, we expect a lot to come from them to pressure the Obama administration to support what we are doing, to make sure that Biafra comes to exist. Biafra is the only natural ally that USA will ever have in Africa.
In Africa, yeah.
Natural. We are never going to bomb USA, are we? We can come here to work for you. We're never going to kill you. That's
right.
Number one.
Yeah.
We are very, very loyal, hardworking, and friendly people. Go and ask anyone, they will tell you. And I see no reason why a people that believe in the irreducibility of an individual, that believes in liberty, that believes in equality and in freedom, the same creed, the same ideals upon which this very great nation, USA, was founded upon, why would you not naturally gravitate towards those people? I can't understand it.
Right.
And if you want to stop the menace of Boko Haram, they should support the creation of Biafra.
Absolutely.
That's all they need to do. We don't want them to do anything. Just come at the UN or make a press statement in the White House by saying that the people of Biafra, their suffering is intolerable. We may have to revisit the issue of them still belonging to one Nigeria. That's all they need to say. That's all.
And it would change.
It's done. Yeah. It's a game changer. It's finished.
Yeah. Wow.
We don't need U.S. troops to come.
No.
We are more than capable. We held out for 3 years.
Yeah.
Against the combined might of Britain, USSR, and the entire Arab world.
Yeah.
For 3 years. So we can deal with them. Trust me, we can. We can.
And do they want that? Does Boko Haram want that? Do they want that violent end?
They do. And sometimes in life, you need to confront them violently.
Yeah.
Or else it will continue to fester.
Yeah.
We must meet them.
And that's hard as Christians.
Yes.
That's
hard. Very, very hard, because we don't take life where we come from.
No.
In other cultures and religion and language, you call another person a human being or a person.
Yeah.
Where we come from, we say matter, which means the beauty of life.
Mm.
So you're forbidden from killing anybody.
Yeah.
You don't kill somebody, because that is the embodiment of God's creation. A person is known as mad. Mad means beauty of life.
Mm.
So you don't take life.
Mm.
So it's very hard for us.
Yeah. But you've been pushed.
No, we are being killed.
Yeah.
Killed. Every day.
Not pushed, killed.
Not pushed, we are being killed.
Let me ask a couple.
Sure.
I'll sit down here too.
Christians, by and large, seem to be oriented towards individual faith, and they seem to be reluctant to face the fact that at times war is necessary. Yes. They call the concept of a holy war being something that you have to struggle with. How have you looked at that? How do you take your faith and the need to sometimes go to war? How does that work for you? How have you? Because you're a very thoughtful man, and I know you've had to look at these issues and defend it.
Yes, the thing is this. My faith taught me to value life, to try to live by the same tenets that have been preached over the years, as contained in the Bible. But there comes a time when self-preservation takes precedent over and above whatever we may think suits us individually. Because by going to war, we are seeking to preserve, in our case, the children of God. If you do nothing, you become extinct. And there will be no one left to worship God, will there, where we come from. So the best thing for us to do is to try as much as possible to reason or come to some level of agreement, accommodation with our adversaries, which has failed so far. The only alternative left for us is to go and meet them wherever we can find them. And we don't have any difficulties because the reason why you have the U.S. Army is to preserve the ideals upon which this country is founded upon. Even your own body has its own defense immune system, isn't it? Without it, the human body will perish. Everywhere you go to, even in heaven, you have angels with your souls guarding the gates of heaven, you know, against the forces of darkness and of hell. So even if you remove, if you extrapolate the argument and take it away into the natural world where nature rather than reason obtains, you will still see the same phenomenon and forces at play, that there is need for you to defend yourself.
I have another question, and that is, our founding fathers had a struggle with that very issue. And is it related to England? They had a strong faith, different faiths, possibly, but they had to come up with a Declaration of Independence. You are the vocal person that has really brought together Radio Biafra. What are the coalitions you have? Do you find that you have... How would you write your Declaration of Independence? What would be included within that? What are the values? Would there be religious freedom for other people who have a different point of view?
Yes, there will be religious freedom. We've had it before. By our own, by our very nature, by our name, Biafra means come and join. That's the meaning of it.
Yeah.
Everybody, including the Sultan of Sokoto, can seek asylum in Biafra. We'll respect him and we'll allow him to come in. It's in our nature, that's how we are. From childhood, your thoughts. If your mom is beating you up or whatever, or chastises you a lot, you just run to the next person. All you need to do is to hold them very tightly, and your mom or your dad will never touch you. We've always had it. So tolerance is interwoven in our essence, in our being. Freedom, freedom, freedom. In every way you can imagine it. There is a name, there's something we say will come from. Onyenachia means, I can never judge you, it's between you and your God. So that tells you.
Absolutely.
We are the original architects of freedom, and the British will attest to that.
Yeah.
We never had any theocracy, no dictatorship, no kings, nothing for thousands of years. We are not about to start now.
For the first time, I think America, in the face of ISIS going into Syria and Iraq, has opened our eyes to the reality of the desire for a caliphate. We think of that now in terms of the Middle East, but Africa has been facing that for a long time. Talk to us about a little bit about the mission that the Islamic jihadists have within Africa to control all of Africa.
And to dovetail on that, it's because this tolerance and this freedom that, that Americans feel, that you feel, Boko Haram does not feel. And ISIS does not feel. And as near as I can tell, Islam does not feel. I'm not A judge of Islam, I don't know.
I would judge them because you don't live with them.
No.
I do.
Yeah.
So I can judge them.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is this. If you go back to the statements made by the man that brought this virulent form of Islam into Nigeria made, Othman Danfodio, from Othman Danfodio to Ahmadu Bello, the son, and right up until this very moment, there's been one common theme running through everything they have said, their ideology, their philosophy, their thinking, their way of life, which is to propagate violent Islam all the way to the ocean. That's something you must know. That work has continued unabated. Biafra is the only piece of unconquered Islamic territory in West Africa, and they are seeking to take it. They vowed to take Biafra. It's on tape, which we will supply you with. So you can see what these people are saying. When you bomb Afghanistan, when USA bombs Afghanistan, they kill us in Nigeria. When there is a cartoon of Prophet Muhammad, they kill us. Every blessed day we are dying. We live with the reality. The slow march of Islam has been ceaseless from time, encouraged by the British. Encouraged by the British, whatever they have been. The British government, you may wish to know, has never supported the independence of any Christian country in the world since the beginning of time. But they have always consciously and studiously supported the emergence of an independent Islamic caliphate.
Yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia.
One of the criticisms that could come your way, or at least questions that could come your way, and that is Biafra does have control of the principal oil within Nigeria, were it to be formed under the present situation.
That is correct, yes.
That is a major obstacle, I would imagine, for people who are frightened of the fact that if you do gain control, they will lose the opportunity of having access to that. How do you approach, as an independent Biafra, the issues that are around the oil, around criticisms, and the resistance that will happen to your independence on the basis of that resource alone?
The resource, we believe in development, which means the oil will have to be sold to our friends and to our partners, and in return, I'm an economist myself, in return we get vital foreign exchange with which, or foreign reserves with which to try and develop other aspects of the economy. We believe in inward investment. We would like companies from countries that are friendly and supportive of Biafra to come in to invest in Biafra. We want investment. We don't want to be like Saudi Arabia, you sell all your land, you buy everything else. No,
right.
We want tangible, concrete investments to come in. We are not going to drink the oil. It's a natural resource. We need to give it to the economies of our friends to keep growing, because a very healthy U.S. economy or a very healthy EU economy is also going to be beneficial to Biafraland. So we can find export markets for our goods and services. We are like that. I mean, we're not. We understand the intricacies of world economy and the need to make available to the international market your resources to continue to fuel human development. So it is not a problem. Our oil fields and that very sector will be open to our friends, and only to our friends.
Mm.
You can't expect not to help us and then eventually we let you in. It's not going to work that way. But if you help us, of course, it's there for all to have access to. We've gone on record to say that oil is not our problem. All we want is freedom. Oil is not the issue. The issue is freedom.
Mm.
Once we have freedom and a semblance of dignity, then we can exist as human beings, because right now I don't see myself as a human being.
Mm.
A monkey is better than me because I don't have freedom.
Mm. One of the things that it's always impressed me, the more I've come to know about your country's history, is the productivity of your people through the ages. You have been, and now many of them who have left Nigeria are all over the world, being productive, hoping that this would happen. I know when Israel eventually became its own country, there was a homecoming, and probably millions of people going to their homeland again. Is that part of your vision? Tell us a little bit about your vision for the future.
They will come back, including some of you from the USA as well.
Mm.
That will be the most natural home for African American people, it will be natural. That will be very, very natural for them to come to, because if you look at the map of Biafra, which is right here in front of us, you will see that the rising sun is cleverly positioned on the black strip of the flag, which means that we bring light where there is darkness. That is what we do. Everybody will run open doors, not just for Biafrans, but also for African Americans that have not been able to connect with Africa for very many centuries. They can come back and become a part of it. Because, mind you, most of the people that were taken away from Africa to come to work in the plantations of the USA came from the Bight of Biafra. This is where we come from. We open our doors for them to try and come back in. Everybody is welcome to come back, to be there.
One of the things they talk about in the Middle East is that none of the countries there outside of Israel pass the public square test. And the public square test is that you can stand on the corner of a street and be critical of their government and their religion and survive. It seems to me this is a stand for freedom and for liberty.
Yes.
And your focus on liberty is a very important part of what drives you.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about your own journey. I mean, you have gone through beatings. I understand you've been in...
Everything. I've been stripped naked and everything. For my faith.
Because where... Talk to us a little bit about your journey, because it has been a personal one where you continue to be a voice for Biafra.
Yes. It started very many years ago. I was educated in England. I went to school in London, and upon graduation, I decided to serve my people because I didn't like what was going on. We have a group of friends, about six of us from Africa. We said when we graduate, we pick one tiny African country and go there and try and develop it. You know, very, very thoughtful and quite progressive of us. And upon graduation, the rest got very blue chip jobs and developed cold feet. I decided to go carry on with it because I felt that the only thing that makes you human is your ability to reason. And as an African, as somebody from Biafra land, unless my land reflects what I believe I possess up here, then I have not made any telling or meaningful contribution to the advancement of mankind. So I decided to plug ahead with it. I went home initially to try and see what we can do to start a revolution on the ground, because the existing order is essentially irredeemably corrupt, as yes. You well know. So we started it, and it didn't quite go very well. I came back to the UK, reassembled, and went back again. We met a few people. We started Radio Biafra, and we started preaching the truth in 2009. And some people were uncomfortable with it. And when I traveled home for a private family ceremony, I was kidnapped. I was beaten, I was tortured, I had people spit at me, some urinated and poured it at me, and for speaking the truth, for telling them that the way they were doing things weren't proper. That wasn't enough. I was arrested before then at Murtala Mohammed Airport. I was detained for 8 days solitary confinement at the SSS headquarters because I was preaching Biafra, had some Biafra materials on me. And after that, I was transferred to Abuja under military escort, a five-car convoy. I was detained for 3 months, solitary confinement again. And there I met the coup plotters from Equatorial Guinea, Mark Thatcher, all the rest of them. And actually, I think the reason why God sent me there was because to save the lives of those people, I believe. Mm. Because had I not gone in there, they would have been killed. But as soon as I came out, I told Amnesty International what was going on, and then they started to sort of fight for them to be released and stuff. So I came, and then I struggled again to start Radio Biafra. People weren't forthcoming. I became homeless in England as a result of it because I was investing so much in broadcasting on shortwave, which is
it's very
prohibitively expensive. And then we continued. Went on to the internet, that our budget could carry us, and then now we're on satellite. So, and it's been relentless, because one thing is, if you're doing the right thing, which I believe we're doing, you continue doing it until at a time when the world will then come to the realization that what you're saying is true, because the suffering has continued, the killings, the death, the deprivation, the deportation. I'm not sure you know that you deport people. Do you know you can deport somebody from a part of Nigeria to another?
How do you do that?
By forcibly removing them from the street.
Yeah.
Locking them up somewhere, putting them in a vehicle, and then transporting them to wherever you want them to go to.
Americans have seen, quote, the Arab Spring actually create more chaos in Africa and the Middle East. It is unchained, even worse conditions.
That's correct, yeah.
Now you're talking almost like a Christian spring. What's different about your approach? How do you move from talking about it on Radio Biafra to actually having it happen? You mentioned, boy, a couple of statements by the government of the United States would help in the UN, those kinds of things. But tell me, how does that move? What's it different? How's it different?
That's what people are waiting for. Because people keep asking us all the time, what is the U.S. government's stance on what we are agitating for or talking about? What is the UN saying? That's what they want to hear.
Right.
What does America think and the UN? So for us, that is the trigger. That is the catalyst that will solve a lot of problems. And the world must be able to rise up and be very mature about it, to say to themselves that in Africa, actually, we do have human beings who can reason properly and not try to be as condescending as they've been all this while.
For years.
I mean, that seems to be this very funny thing that self-awareness or criticism works in the West, but you, as a black person from Africa, you're not allowed to criticize yourself or something. I don't believe in that. I believe in being self-critical. If I've done something wrong, I believe in appraising myself. How we're going to do it is very simple. The American public is also very critical in this. If the American public can give us their support, that will then spur us on to go back to our people and to say there is no, the government may not be listening, but the people that own America are listening, and we can work with them. That will then give them the impetus to go ahead and rightfully possess what belongs to them. Because one thing we're not going to have, which is what we're making it very clear to the world, is this. The status quo can't continue, I'm afraid. It cannot continue. It can't. And in terms of controlling the outcome, the aftermath of any kind of spring that may result is that you always look at the value system of a people. That is the determinant. That determines the outcome. Those of them that believe in unwavering Sharia Islam... You always know that you cannot have a democracy, liberty, or freedom under Islamic rule. Is there in the Quran, if we bother to read it? Is there? It can never happen. And then you have Biafrans on the other end of the spectrum that believes in libertarian values, not just liberty. We are libertarians to the extreme. When you grow up where we come from, you migrate a few miles away from your father's house so that your parents would even have to disturb you. You go there and grow your own family all by yourself. We come from a country where if you're born a male child, automatically, by right of nature, one day you will become a landlord. You will have a piece of land upon which to build. Irreducible. It never changes. Therefore, in our bones, not just in the blood, we have the DNA of freedom implanted in it. All these things changed, and we're trying to go back to it. So we can never, the excesses of what happens when you have a new African country won't apply in our case. Because, frankly, we're not like them.
Right.
Can never be.
Yeah.
We are different.
And doing so, as you say, is part of what Americans, what Westerners would refer to as seed planting, as putting a Christian, economically cooperative people in a place where we've really not had that.
Exactly. And not only that, you know, I travel across this stretch of Africa. I travel from Gabon all the way to Gambia.
Oh my.
All the time. And I can't, it would please me to see Americans, all these my people here, bring down their friends to come home on holidays to say, these are my friends, I've brought them from the USA and all the rest, for us to enjoy. You can't do that anymore, can you?
No.
Because you're afraid of kidnappings and all the rest of it, sure. All these social vices and ills. The best thing that America can ever do in terms of its foreign policy is to support the emergence of Biafra, ever.
Mm.
Because, as you quite rightly pointed out, from Biafra, the America can say, I can always use Biafra as an example.
Yeah.
The same way that Israel is just an example in the Middle East. Yeah. Isn't it very funny that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East where you can vote, you can actually stand on the street corner and criticize anybody you like.
Including the Israelis.
And nothing happens to you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Nothing. I said to people that criticism can only make you get better. It won't kill you.
No.
It won't kill you. It does nothing to you. Somebody saying, oh, you're stupid, you're this. Tell me what you're doing with our money, our taxes, and is for you to stand there and explain.
Yeah.
That is why we run Radio Biafra the way we do, so that when we graduate from here into proper governance, by the grace of God, you can be able to stand up and defend your record before the people.
Yeah.
That is how America became the strongest country in the world. Yeah. Not by doing things in the secret.
No.
I said this to some, that I used to say to them all the time, never be afraid of openness. After all, the greatest country in the world does all their inquiries in the open. Is it the Iraq gate?
Yeah.
Is it the Watergate issue? Everything is in the open. Did it weaken the presidency? The answer is no, it made them stronger.
If you had one more thing to say to the people, either on video or in reports, or what would you want to say to Americans here who do value freedom and will want to hear what you have to say?
To those Americans here that value freedom and believe in it, it is also their duty to protect freedom wherever they can, to protect people defending the ideals upon which the USA is founded upon. Very, very critical. It is no use saying, I'm an American, things works here for me, because in the not-too-distant future, won't work anymore. You can't travel to London because ISIS will be there,
right.
I can assure you.
Yeah.
Now, it is the duty of America. I mean, the world is at a crossroads right now. As I said earlier during my opening statement, the battle between good and evil.
Amen.
Light versus darkness.
Yeah.
So it is either you stand in faith with what you know to be correct than for you to be cowed by, I cannot put it, by what you perceive to be the overwhelming preponderance of the forces of darkness. And because of that, you cower into a corner because they're going to come after you.
Mm-hmm.
The disease in your body, if you live it, it keeps festering. You must confront it.
London was a revelation to me for that very reason. More Islamic people than I had ever experienced in one place, including all over Austria, Hungary, where I was. And there were some there, but London was at, and they were, there was a protest the day that we were there, and we were walking by Westminster Abbey, and the protest was gigantic, and it was Gazans protesting against Israel, and they were being protected by the UK police, and as is their right to free speech, but one of the signs read, Britain accomplice to murder, and it didn't dawn on me until what you've just said, how ironically true that statement is.
But it is true.
What they have supported will come to bite them.
That's what I tell them all the time, that the British made a monumental mistake by supporting the death of 3.5 million of my people.
Mm.
The worst mistake ever made. They will come after them and they will kill them. You mark my words somewhere.
So
the British Isles will be overrun by Islam.
Yeah.
Because they are there already. Do you know that they don't pay for their parking tickets?
Yes.
Do you know that?
I knew. I've
the number one name in the UK for a child is Muhammad.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes. Go and have a look at it. It is there. So the UK government and her people supported the emergence of Bosnia-Herzegovina from a predominantly Christian Orthodox Serbia and before that Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
They supported the emergence of Albania. Also Muslim. And what's the other one again? There's Albania, there's Kosovo as well.
And the US did too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They supported the freedoms of all the Arab countries away from the Ottoman Empire, you know, Lawrence of Arabia or the rest of it.
Mm.
The British occupied Palestine and refused the rite of passage. I read Leon Uris's book, Exodus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever read it before. Mm-hmm. I read it. How they refused Exodus to dock. Mm-hmm. I think it was in Haifa or so. Mm-hmm. By the British garrison there, saying no to them that they can't come in. But you can quite easily go to the same Bible that you read all the time and see who owns the land. They can see it very clearly. Because there is something about humanity, I would say, that baffles me. You have before you all the available facts and evidence, and you consciously choose to ignore it. There's something wrong with that person. And also the British did. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really surprise me at all. And I've said to them before that you have something against the children of God. Mm. That's the British people. Of course they did. In Israel, they didn't want to go away. The British officers were within the Jordanian. In fact, the entire officer class of the Jordanian army that fought the Israel in the War of Independence, where people didn't know this, were staffed by British officers.
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, go and have a look. Go and have a look. The Jordanian army, go and have a look. They still lost. Anyway,
yeah.
Now, the fact remains that we must be bold enough. America is the last bastion of hope. That is why sometimes Obama's administration, I wonder. I don't know what's going on.
I do too.
We must stand up and for some time do away with political. I can't stand political correctness. Do away with it for some minute and face the hard reality. If somebody has a problem that requires invasive surgery, you cut them open to get at the problem and then resolve it.
Right.
There is no need applying ointment or trying to be very nice to them when people are festering and dying on the inside. That is what he has to do. He needs to be decisive. The support for Israel is critical. It is critical. There is no way you can use human shield or launch attacks against a sovereign nation from the comfort of a, you know, children's classroom and don't expect some measure of reprisal. Mm. When the Japanese attacked America, America responded. When Hitler attacked Britain, Churchill responded. You never allowed tyranny or terror to prevail. Why must other people be allowed to live under that? It's not possible.
Mm.
If you don't help us, we all sink in this one big, gigantic cauldron of deceit and lies.
And darkness.
And darkness, yeah. Of course. Very, very important.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. What an eye-opening experience.
Thank you.
Fodosita kukata sinone muka Thank you.